I want more space in my backyard. Do you think I could sell one to two of my children for that?
Yeah.
Acreage.
It's not a sell. You're marrying them off.
It's a trade. It's a trade.
Absolutely. Let's get on that. Welcome to Signal, the podcast that raises your frequency. I'm Maury Fontanez.
And I'm Melissa Grushka.
And today we're going to talk about conscious relationships. Bean, are you ready to get conscious about your relationships?
Sure am, Gwyneth.
Hello there, Beanie.
Hello.
You just had the great idea that when we record this podcast, instead of facing straight, we should face to the side so that it looks like we're looking at each other if you watch this on YouTube.
We can even start to incorporate props. Like we'll have like champagne glasses and we'll try to cheers them.
Oh, cute.
Thanks.
You are so creative.
We'll come up with different ideas. Oh, I have a new one. We could pass things through the screen, but we both have to have something.
Oh, so I'll like hand
it and you'll grab it and pull it over.
Can we try that?
Yeah.
Okay, next week. Guys, this is very exciting.
Oh, it could be our Prince duck. Because we both have it in our office.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, what's going on? How's your week?
My week's a week, man. I am in full-blown bat mitzvah preparation mode.
What's the latest? Give us the tea on the box.
So many decisions. And for a I'm really good at making decisions for other people. Like I could plan the shit out of a party for you. Mm-hmm. But like for me, I'm like, ugh. And I'm really trying to do her vision, which truth talk is not always my vision. So it's also hard in that regard.
What's her vision?
She's actually being very feminine, which one, I am not very feminine. And two, she's not very feminine.
Oh, interesting.
But it's a very feminine, light, like aesthetic. So I'm really trying to work with it and keep it fun and youthful at the same time.
She's at the age where she's just assimilating to what she thinks the girls who are going to come want to see at the party. Well, I'm very excited. I got my invite in RSVPDS.
Yes.
It's going to be epic.
I saw it. It is going to be epic.
All right. Well, do you have a cringe or delight or is that just the delight?
Well, I had a little silly cringe.
Oh.
But I'm going to cringe and then I'll share a really quick delight. My cringe is from last weekend, I took my little ones to see Kung Fu Panda 4. I feel like
they need to stop it.
I was going to say,
four?
It's enough Kung Fu.
What more is there to do?
Kung Fu.
He's just fighting different villains, monsters?
Yeah, I'd actually say that the plot of this was very clever. I just is a little sleepy.
Yeah,
anyway,
four's too much.
It was like monsooning here last weekend. Like it was torrential downpours last weekend. And we got out of the car really quick in the rain and we ran into the movie theater and we were in there for, I don't know, several hours as you are in a movie theater and came back out to find that the side door of my minivan had been left open.
Oh, shoot.
Torrential, not like a little drizzle, like torrential to the point that my son's car seat was soaked, like one of those big ass fancy car seats.
Oh no.
And I had to get rid of it. It was like drenched. And my back seat of my car was wet, like the third row, because the wind was so strong. It was like blowing rain into the back seat. I know.
That's...
It was like one of those moments that I was like, oh no.
Does it smell like mold in your car now?
Not yet. It just got warm this week. I will tell you, my car is almost done anyway for my lease. And I did spill a large cup of coffee with milk in about 6 months ago. And it absorbed into the seat before I could clean it. So no matter what, there's a stench coming.
Wow. So Bean, I just want to point out, this is probably the third week in a row you've talked about the weather.
Honestly, I switched it because my delight was going to be the weather this week because it's been in like the 60s. Wait, what it's like, I'm telling you, all East Coasters can attest to this. Well, Northeast Coasts. When it becomes warm, we become like a different type of being.
I get
it. Like people are in the streets. My kids are out. We're out way later than we normally. I would like push bedtime so they can get more outside time. I mean, everyone's like waving and hopping around and there's like baby bunnies running. It's epic.
Ooh, you know what I heard in the background when you were saying all that? Like that. That's the soundtrack to your
to my joyful time.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Was that really your delight? Okay, let's move on.
No. My actual delight that I was going to change my car cringe to do was prior to this podcast, we normally hop on and we give ourselves 2 hours to get our pod done. And today, instead of podcasting, We just talked for an hour and we really enjoy talking with our producer. We really enjoy our Friday morning chit chats. It's really delightful. It sets like the whole tone for the weekend. It's really beautiful.
Totally. The three of us either before or after at least spend 30 minutes. And it's such a like healing conversation all the time. And we say like our deepest, darkest feelings and thoughts to each other. And then it's always inevitably one person is like the sage. The other two are in their feelings. Usually it's Bean telling Anais and I to get our act together and stop being so emo.
I've been in my feelings here. You've been in a safe space. Yeah.
It's really good. You're right. That is so, it's such a, it's amazing.
It's a very safe space. It's very judgment free.
Maybe a little sideshow is just recording that hour and putting that somewhere.
I think it's really vulnerable and beautiful. And often we'll text later in the day being like, great talk, guys, or something.
Wow, that is delightful. You're right.
Thanks. Okay, your turn. Not weather related, but you get good weather, so you don't get it.
You realize that I lived in Maryland for 35 years, right?
But now you just get sunshine, so you forgot.
It is all sunshine. And it feels like summer here right now already, which is so great.
Exactly.
I have a cringe and a delight. My cringe is that I drank two glasses of wine last night and I feel like a freaking trash bag today. Like I can't really get my act together. I don't feel – two glasses of wine, this is what it's come down to.
I feel like we had two glasses of wine multiple times while I was there.
Yeah, tequila. But I didn't wake up early, I guess, and try to do a podcast. But anyway, I feel like half alive and zombie-like and just really sad that this is what's happening with age is that alcohol is becoming really difficult.
I know. It's really upsetting.
It's sad. Yeah. My delight is that this week – my friend and also she's been on the show, Dylan Mulvaney, had her 2 years of girlhood celebration.
So fun. Mazel, Dylan.
LA. It was so fun. She performed. She sang. Oh, I sent you the video that Carrie Wilson. Good. Is that her first name?
Carney.
Carney Wilson came out and they sang, I know a thing. How do you sing it? Okay, we suck. Anyway, so they sang Hold On for One More Day. And then we danced. I haven't danced in so long with my friends. It was just so much fun on a random Tuesday. I had the time of my life at this celebration. Danced my little butt off.
Wow. Get it, girl.
Yeah. Thank you. Well, what do you think about talking about conscious relationships? This is a big one.
I know. It feels a little heavy, but I'm here.
Does it? I think it can be light.
I think it's going to be heavy for a lot of people because they're going to be like totally reflecting on, I mean, we're mostly talking about romantic relationships here.
That is what we are talking about.
Correct.
For sure.
So I think that this episode will give everyone a little pause to think about how their relationship stands against what we're going to talk about.
Yes, that's true. All right.
So well, I think it'll end up being heavy.
Relationships. What do we mean by that?
I don't know. Maybe everyone should start crying now.
Okay. Go.
No,
this
start.
Is really a juxtaposition to, I think, the way that we feel most relationships are right now in our culture, which is sort of unconscious. And by unconscious, what I mean is that we enter into these commitments out of spaces of sometimes contraction, you know, fear, a need for safety, a need for structure. And there's love there, obviously, for sure. But that maybe we weren't fully conscious of every aspect of our needs when we entered into these relationships. We make these commitments and then we just kind of sleepwalk through the commitments we've made and don't stop to check in enough with, are my needs changing? Am I changing? What's happening now? What do I need from my partnership now? Am I being honest with myself? Am I being honest with you? Which leads to a lot of, you know, miscommunication, lack of communication, and ultimately growing apart in lots of ways. And we were talking about how, you know, the generation before us, our parents, mine are divorced, so I didn't necessarily experience this, but I see this in my friends and other, you know, family members where it's just sort of the norm to just exist in this way where you are going along to get along. And we've learned a lot of those habits from our parents and the generation before us. where they're not modeling this conscious relationship. They're modeling this unconscious staying in it because you decided you were going to be a certain person 30 years ago. And you're just kind of having to at least perform being that same person 30 years later. And it may not be aligned to your truth.
Right. I feel like we evolve our entire lives. A lot of people marry when they're young and we continue to evolve, but our relationships and the way we enter them often remains the same.
Yes.
Which is kind of bizarre. It's like, doesn't fit any longer. Doesn't mean you have to leave. It just means your relationship has to evolve as you evolve.
Yeah. Well, and you know what? I think that we have to just point to how big the need for safety is in all of us, and how so much of the reason we get into long commitments is for that feeling of safety. And I was actually just talking about this with a friend yesterday. I was saying that I value freedom. It's like my number one value. I think I've said that. And I was saying, we were talking about how funny it is to value freedom, but to create such a structured, conformist life where I am married in a monogamous relationship to a man. And, you know, what is that about? And I was saying that for me, at least, it was this idea of, you know, having so much instability in my home as a child, that like there's a gaping need in me for that instability to just not be there in my home life. And so that need for safety is part of why I would have never considered another kind of relationship, or I would have never been the kind of person to say, I'm not getting married. Like, marriage isn't for me. The marriage is this safety net that I, that younger part of me needed. And I'm lucky because I'm with someone who I'm in a conscious relationship with. So I get to have really open communication. Communication. It still feels very free to me. But anyway, I think that we just naturally get into these kinds of dynamics and relationships out of a need for safety, which we choose over our truth and our actual deep down desires and changing desires as we grow.
I also think sometimes it is your truth in the moment. And then as you change and grow, that it your truth kind of shifts a little bit. And that if you can't be met there or meet your partner where their growth is happening, it becomes a problem and everyone shuts down.
Right.
I'm curious if you think that the younger generation, because I know more of the youth are making the decision to not marry, not have children in a way that I haven't seen on like in our generation. I'm curious if they will be more prone to conscious coupling or conscious relationships. Or they just can't escape it, that we all basically are doing what the people before us were doing.
No, I think I do definitely see that the generations after us are more conscious and more. I think it comes from feeling inherently like their needs matter in a way that I don't think that we felt. So I think that they are choosing to find relationships later in life, making commitments later in life.
Right.
And that those commitments are more indicative and reflective of their truth. Like, I have more friends that are poly than that are younger. They're 10 to 15 years younger than me than I ever had when I was in my 20s and 30s at my age.
Right. That didn't exist.
I mean, it existed, but it wasn't so openly. Right. Yeah, totally. But it's such a, like, when I talk to them, it's such a education for me in, oh, got it. Like, you have this part of you that you just accept as your truth instead of having shame about it. And you're able to then openly communicate with another person about your desires and your needs. And because you're so open and the shame is not there, you're communicating it so clearly and you're setting expectations together as a couple. And you're able to be in this open relationship or be polyamorous together because you're always communicating your needs openly.
I love that. I would love to talk about that. We should have one of your poly friends on an episode.
Yeah.
I think it's like an educational moment, because I still think our entire generation we can't understand it from a healthy headspace. I can personally. Yeah. I'm just saying, I think a lot of people our age would be like, how does that work? Because we are all functioning in this older mentality that isn't necessarily even working for us all anymore.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute. You and I have always agreed on this idea that monogamy is not natural.
Correct. But can I preface it by saying, because I'm always like, I need to protect everybody. Monogamy is not natural, but I do believe in commitment. I have said that before, that if you choose and tell your partner, I am going to be monogamous with you, then it becomes important.
And absolutely.
It's a quality that you need to preserve.
Yes. I'm not saying that as like an excuse to go do whatever you want. I think what I'm saying is we have formed this idea about romantic relationships based off of something that humans did for economic reasons hundreds of years ago. And it's become our standard. And so let me just be clear what I mean by that. You know, when we were growing from an agricultural society to an industrial society, like there were landowners, like the way that people made their money hundreds of years ago is in land ownership, is in what you grow in that land. And to increase your wealth, you need to increase the amount of land that you owned. And so oftentimes marriage was how you made that happen.
You trade a lady for some land. You can have my daughter.
So when I say marriage is an economic construct, I literally mean marriage is an economic, it started from this place of, you know, this union is going to help us economically be stable or flourish. And so in that union, that's like a business partnership. And that partnership has to be between two people and valued above all else for the economic stability. And we have taken that. And our, as our culture has moved forward, it's just become our standard for how a like good or successful couple looks like. But it's based in this history that comes from economic stability. And I, that kind of maybe takes some of the romance out of it. But I just think it's important when I when we say, you know, monogamy is not natural and here's where we've landed to understand why. That it's not about tapping into the truth of how human beings are, which is biologically to go spread your seed as far and wide as you can so that we can survive. But it's about an economic thing that we needed to do so that we could thrive.
So do you think I want more space in my backyard? Do you think I could sell one to two of my children for that acreage?
It's not a sell. It's not a sell. It's a
trade.
You're marrying
it's a trade.
Them off. Please. Yes. Absolutely. That's what let's get on
you're
that.
You're right. How dare I?
I'm Persian. We trade goats and sheep for wives.
All right. Yeah. I'll take that
not
too.
Anymore, but we did. Oh. I know.
Okay, fine. So we're not there. We've moved on. We've evolved as a society, as women, as everything, but we're still sort of stuck in these patterns. So how can you recognize or come up for a little air and notice, hey, I'm actually ready for this conscious relationship format?
Format. Well, I mean, I think that what I've noticed in myself and what I notice in friends and clients is first recognizing the discomfort of being in the unconscious relationship is the first step, and admitting it to yourself. That is the hardest part, because people are just kind of deciding, I think, that if you don't admit the real feelings beneath, like it almost to me is like, it's like a duck, like it looks steady up top. So I'm just going to keep it going in this way. I'm going to show up in this way, in my marriage, in my family, as this happy couple, because what else could we want? We have the house, we have the kids, we have the good jobs. You know what I mean? Like, so I'm going to present that. But the feelings are like the duck's legs underneath paddling really fast. And, you know, a lot of the time we don't allow those feelings to even be acknowledged from us. We don't acknowledge those feelings rumbling beneath. Right. And those feelings can look like, man, I'm really bored. Or I feel really unmet. You know, I feel like when I get excited about something, my partner can't meet me at that level, like doesn't get it. Or when I'm deeply sad or emotional about something, my partner just can't meet me there or hold me in a way energetically, emotionally, physically that makes me feel met. But this feeling of being unmet by your partner in some way, I think creates like this like gaping hole inside.
And
you know,
resentment.
And resentment.
Which is I think is one of the most dangerous things that can happen to anybody regarding any situation. I think resentment can just eat away at your soul and your being.
Yes. Yeah. Truly. So the unconscious part of that is not admitting it to yourself, A. And then the unconscious part of that is if you do admit it to yourself, not feeling that you can communicate it to your partner. If you flip it, a conscious relationship is about being so in tune with every single ripple that's going on inside of that body, every single feeling you're having, being in tune with it, admitting it to yourself, not fearing your own feelings, and then two, communicating how you're feeling really, really openly. And I can just tell you, because I'm not just bidding nonsense at you, this is how TJ and I live our lives. It's really uncomfortable sometimes to say the truest thing out loud to your partner. Because absolutely, you don't know how they're going to react. Sometimes it's like it's so about you, it can feel selfish. Sometimes it can feel frightening for them, but you still have to do it. But I think that in the unconscious mind, we are so afraid of what the reaction might be. And because we crave the safety so much, we are afraid that our truth is going to come in direct confrontation with safety, and that we'll lose the safety from that person if we admit whatever that truth is beneath us, which is like, hey, we've been in a routine for 5 years and I'm feeling stifled by it. I'm feeling bored right now. I mean, think about if we had a culture where you could just say that, I guarantee people wouldn't be having affairs in the way that they have affairs and
agreed
hurt each other.
Another thing I'd like to touch on is that in the communication process, this is I'm very freshly consciously in a conscious relationship. We are just past that threshold of our kids are really little and we're just kind of keeping our head above water and we're just going through the motions, yeah, and the naps and the illnesses and the this and the that and the COVID.
Right.
To now a place where our kids are a little more independent and we are back to like, oh, right, you again kind of thing. And yes, I feel like it was two roads. It was like you again and all of this resentment that has been building between, yeah, both of us, or you again, now we have a little more space and time to discuss this like adults, mm, if we, mm-hmm, want to. And, mm-hmm, one thing I am trying to do in my newly found conscious approach is not a lot of like, and I think it's also actually been clarifying for me that it's often not even necessarily something intentional that he's doing or like some directly unkind action. It's just ways that I feel in response to certain behaviors of his. So I've kind of been approaching it a lot in a very neutral way. Like, not like, when you do this, I'm crying inside. It's kind of like, hey, even last night we were, this is kind of silly, but it's just an example of it. We were laying in bed and we were talking about something. And I said, I kind of wish you were like a little more affectionate with me right now. Like, that's just something that I felt in my body in that moment. And I said it, and I didn't say it like accusatory, like, why aren't you holding me and why aren't you doing this? It was kind of like, this is something in this moment that I would really like. I didn't love that I had to say it. It then felt less genuine when he did it, but I feel like it prepared him for the next time. Like, this is a need I have. I'm going to express it to you. Now you can do with it what you will.
Yeah, totally.
Which I do with a lot of things now. Like, here, this is how I'm feeling. I'm going to hand it over very calmly to you and you can respond accordingly or not.
First of all, I love that you did that. I'm so happy that you did that.
I do it all the time. It's called verbal diarrhea now. Yes.
Oh, okay. Secondly, though, you just brought up this reason that I think sometimes we don't do it, which is that we are very aware or we are afraid that the person can't meet the need once we say it out loud.
Which is
so
possible.
It's so much easier to not say it out loud and not get disappointed.
Yes.
Then, oh my God, I said it out loud. They couldn't do it. Now what? Like, now I have to make a decision or now there's a choice. I think that there's this fear often in relationships that we have to break up or it has to end.
Right.
It's like so binary.
Agreed.
That fear makes us silent because we don't want to put ourselves in a position where we're disappointed and then we have to make a decision from that place of disappointment.
But what I have come to understand is that we are operating a lot, we as in humans, expecting, and even talking to friends and talking to everybody about their own relationships, we are all constantly living in this, well, he should know that or she should know that. Like, of course I needed help. Of course I did it. And I'm like, I'm going to start operating from a place of you're not a mind reader. So yes. I may think you know something and you may actually know it, but you're not acting on it. So I'm either going to one, bring it to your attention and let you know how I'm feeling, or two, let you know that I know that this is something you should be doing. Like, it's just very, very neutral.
You bring up a really good point about accountability. Yes. I think that we do not hold ourselves accountable for getting our needs met in a relationship.
Right. That's what
we completely bypass that over to the other person. Like, we decide that because I'm in a relationship, it's your job to meet my needs at all times. It's not my job to meet my needs, which means either I go literally meet the need myself or I articulate the need really, really clearly. And I do think that accountability to yourself and your needs, you know, I said the first step is admitting what you need to yourself instead of ignoring it. The second one is understanding I am responsible for my needs. So I now either need to articulate them or I've got to go find a way to get them met. And if I get them met, am I okay with you being who you are if I can go get this need met from another place? Like if it's, let's say it's I need emotional intimacy. I'll call you sometimes, Bean. I'll call Anais. Like I don't need – sometimes TJ cannot meet me there.
And that's okay. But you needed to communicate. And you might even say to him later then, like, I was kind of bummed that you couldn't receive what I was saying or whatever, and then move on from it. And he can be like, I'm sorry that I couldn't do that. And that sometimes is enough to just move on from it. Not if we keep pushing, pushing, pushing down and never addressing anything. Like last night with the thing where I said, I would love it if you were like holding me right now. That was just my need. He's not wrong for not holding me. Maybe he didn't feel affectionate in that moment and that's okay. But then I said like, this is something I'm needing right now. Mm-hmm. It's not even, it's not about like whether you are in or out and I shouldn't take it so personally. And just verbalizing it has, I think, shifted our dynamic a little bit and has actually allowed us to be more honest. We've been having some very vulnerable conversations because we've created this space lately where we're able to kind of say things neutrally. So when we are able to share like a deeper truth, it feels like it's in a, I guess, like a safer space.
Hello?
Hello?
Hi, is this Jasmine?
Yes. We had to take a little break there because I got a phone call. Bean, can you believe what just happened?
No, it was so beautiful. I want to commend not only your son for doing such a beautiful job, but also the teacher for taking the time out of her day to share positive news, not just negative news.
We were recording. We were on a flow talking about conscious relationships. My phone rings. It's a 805 number, which tells me it's school in the middle of the day. So, of course, I answer on speaker. And it was my youngest son's teacher calling, this English teacher of all things, calling to say, I just was calling to tell you what a delight your child is and what a good job he does and how engaged he is and how, I mean, she went on and on and on.
Yeah. I really love that she did that. I love him for being so great. And I love that she did that as a teacher.
Yes. That was it's so good to hear. That made my day. Kids.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah. There's my delight, you guys. I know we're in the middle of the show. Okay. Yeah. All right. Anyway, back to conscious relationships.
I'm sorry.
Yay. Yay, Kian. Anyway, we were, yes, you were talking about speaking the need out loud. Yeah. And I, you know, I think that it's just, it's real. It's a real fear that we might not be met or I have friends who have spoken the need repeatedly out loud and are unmet.
And that's
and
okay.
then, yeah, then it's like, then okay, well, what do I do?
Right. Then you have the information to work with. That's what I'm saying. That's the difference.
The trouble there is that then a decision does feel more necessary because if you are, here's the thing. When you become awakened to your needs, they don't go away.
No.
Like when you are able to bury your head in the sand, your head's in the sand.
Yeah.
But once your head's out of the sand and you're looking around and you can see what's going on inside and what you need, and you've said it out loud and you're not getting it, it becomes intolerable to exist in an environment where you know you're never going to get it.
Agreed.
That's the truth.
I feel when you gain more clarity, though, as you continue to gain more clarity and you are speaking your truth more regularly, not just like in certain moments, like this is a time I'm going to share it, but I'm not going to share it all the other times. When you are becoming more aligned with sharing how you, what you need and how you feel, you can see that as just one piece of the puzzle. Like, they don't have to meet, they're not meeting that need. Okay, now I can factor that in with everything else that's going on. It's not like, right, they're not meeting the need that I very expressly put out there, so I'm leaving now. Nothing has to be, that doesn't even have to push a decision. That is just, yeah, more information and knowledge that you have to work with, however you choose to work with it. And I'd rather be in the know than be in the dark.
Yes, and let's normalize that the ending of a relationship is not a failure on your part.
Agreed.
Let's normalize that divorce is not a failure.
Particularly in a situation where you have learned very, yes, clearly, this is what I want. This is how I will feel most fulfilled. Can you do that for me? Oh, yes, you can, but you could have 20 years ago, but I've evolved. And if you can no, yes, longer meet me here, or I can no longer meet you there, perhaps it's time to reassess, to allow each other to grow and expand, which can be beautiful.
Yeah. I see people choosing the safety and the lack of, like, feeling like a failure over their own needs, mm-hmm, so often. And, mm-hmm, I do think it gets unsustainable. I think
it's less scary that way.
Yeah,
for a long time.
But it does lead to a harder inner life.
Yeah.
And that you can only take for so long. You know,
true,
that's how we get disassociated from ourselves, is when we are just taking it, mm-hmm, and taking it because we're choosing something out of a need for safety, which is a big need. I don't want to understand. Like, I get it. And by the way, I've been divorced, so it's terrifying.
Yeah.
And it, again, it comes back to my favorite quote, which we now know is not Anais Nin, but the day came when the risk to remain tight in a bud was more painful than the risk it took to blossom. Like, what that quote means to me is there comes a day where the safety of that tight in a bud is so much more painful than not expressing, not being in your truth, not having your truth met. And that moment comes for some of us. And so, just to rewind back to why we exist in unconscious relationships, why we don't admit our needs to ourselves, why we don't say them out loud, is because oftentimes we know deep inside of us that this is heading in a direction that can feel like a really hard decision has to be made, because if I really admit to myself that I have these needs and they're unmet, and if I say them out loud and they continue to be unmet, I will no longer be able to handle. I will, right, no longer be able to survive in this tight bud of ignoring it any longer, because the needs will be so loud inside of me.
Again, only if you're at a place where you have become enlightened enough to be so aware of all of your needs. I think a, yeah, lot of people are able to stay in the unconscious relationship place because they are not as aware of their need and their truth, and they've kind of covered that up as well just to keep functioning and keep stability in place.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so now everyone has decided whether they're in a conscious or an unconscious relationship. And I would imagine a lot of people listening are like, oh yeah, I guess I really am operating from a place of unconscious, whatever you want to call it. What do I do to move towards a conscious relationship? Bean, take it away.
I love that you're asking so we can land in a hopeful place. I want to land in a hopeful place here.
I don't think this has been so unhopeful, and it actually hasn't been as dark. And I actually think it's more aligned with your work, in that you have to get to function at your best, in your best way. You have to get to your truth and allow that to be vocalized and out there.
You have to advocate for your truth more, yes, than anything.
Yes.
And more than
anything.
Or you
are not living a life of true fulfillment.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. No. So listen, I mean, I really put this question, or the answer to this question of how do I start to navigate towards a conscious relationship, into three buckets or three steps. You know, I like systems.
I know you do.
The first one is, I think we need to start to become more curious about the person across from us as we grow together.
Yes.
I think that we see our partners as an extension of ourselves. This is also,
absolutely,
true for your children, by the way. Yes. Where our egoic mind decides this partner, this husband, this wife, this partner is an extension of me. It is an expression of me. And therefore, we lose curiosity about who they are as an individual. And a conscious relationship is about looking at the person across from you as a system onto themselves. It's like you're discovering a new planet. And that planet is changing over time. And to begin to get curious about the changes that are going on with that person out of a place of genuine interest in them is so important, because it can help be an antidote to the fear that says, if they're changing, I will somehow lose them, or I will somehow lose myself in their changes. But if we can start to normalize having that curiosity about each other and asking each other what's going on in each other's inner world and becoming interested as almost a dispassionate observer who is really like, wow, tell me about that. What's that like for you? And not putting yourself in the middle of that story. Right. You can grow together, because then you're not making it about you. You're making it about being alongside someone on your journey towards higher self. And God, how loving is that, to have someone who's so interested in you as you grow? And how much more intimacy does that allow and create?
Right. We're talking about how you evolve. I mean, I got married at 26 or 27, and how different I am now, 15 years later, right? 20 years later. But we don't take the time to pay attention to our partner's growth and evolution, because you just are going through the day-to-day routine. So you're almost just treating them like they were when they were 30 or however old you got married. And I am not looking at Corey like, oh, he's evolved so much. Not only have I evolved and my needs have changed, he's had to have as well. So I need to understand that from him. If he wants to feel safe and loved here, he also needs to express that to me. And I have to show interest, and I have to have genuine interest. Like, oh yeah, who are you again?
Yeah. We want so badly to be seen. We forget that we have to do the seeing as well.
Yeah.
You know, like you want that curiosity about you from your partner, then you need to also like have that curiosity for your partner. It's not a one-way street. Thank you. Mm-hmm. But which leads me to the second part, which is, when you normalize that your partner is going to be changing and having needs that are about them and not about you, you are able to normalize your changing needs and truths. So the second thing is like unabashedly learning to follow the call of your needs and your desires and your truth without fear. And what that means is, when that little poke, poke, poke happens inside, that's like, hi, a feeling, a new one, you actually stop and give it your attention and be like, what is this feeling? What am I feeling?
And for the record, it doesn't have to mean like, oh, what am I feeling? I'm unhappy. I have to leave, or I have to do this right now. It's like, just acknowledge it. Just see it and let it be and see where that goes. And it all becomes a piece of a much larger puzzle.
Yes.
Feeling bored and feeling all of these totally rational and normal things does not mean that you have to leave. There are so many other avenues to try to gain a clearer understanding of the situation as a whole.
It also releases so much pressure when you're in a relationship where you're realizing, oh, I'm feeling bored. And then you say to your partner, I've been feeling really bored lately. Rather than hiding that boredom like it's some kind of shameful secret.
And not saying, you're boring me. I also think that's critical. Make it more neutral. I feel, I think, I see.
Yeah.
And that is your truth. They may not feel it or agree with it, but that's still your truth. I am feeling bored lately. How can we work together to create more excitement in my life with each other?
Or you're not even at the solution stage yet.
Yeah.
It's just this sharing. Is what I'm feeling like, and I'm exploring what and why. What I mean is, like, it's almost like a pressure valve gets released when you say it out loud rather than holding it in like it's some dark secret because when we have that dynamic, that energy of shame around our needs, they get really like deformed.
Yeah.
Those needs don't stay crystal clear anymore. They deform into something gnarly. Like they become something that we act out in a way that is harmful. The right. shame is what makes us act those needs out in a harmful way. I want to say that really clearly, because we have learned that our desire is dangerous because we have shame over our desires, and that shame causes us to act out in harmful ways to us and other people. But if we were to learn that our desires are not shameful and can be spoken openly, then they don't have to be acted out in that kind of way. So admitting it to yourself, that's why I say unabashedly follow the call. That means I feel it. I hear you. There's a little siren call going on. Right. I'm going to tune in. What are you saying? What are you needing in my inner world? And then how do I, because I've established this curiosity about my partner, also then speak up about what's going on with me and hope that they're just as curious and they're able to receive it in a way that they don't make it about themselves. And you know right. what? If you have a partner who's going to constantly make your needs about them, that's information.
Right. Exactly. That's what I was saying.
That's information.
Even offering it up and receiving. Right. Information is power and knowledge.
You know, and I think that we don't necessarily also feel comfortable saying our needs, because we are, a lot of us, in a belief system that making our partners comfortable is our number one priority. That care right. is about their total comfort. And, you know, I say this probably in every episode. If you are making someone comfortable, then what you're saying is, I don't want you to grow, because growth is right. discomfort. So, you know, that myth that our job as a romantic partner is to just constantly assure the comfort of the other person ahead of our own truth is keeping them small and keeping you small. So checking in on, am I not communicating openly and honestly because I'm putting your comfort ahead of my truth? Ah, well, here we go. We're going to be unconscious now. Now we're going to be right. sleepwalking through this thing.
I bet if you are feeling some level of boredom or discomfort or something, that there's probably something on the other end as well, even if it doesn't seem that way.
Oftentimes it's such a relief to hear it, because then you're inviting your partner to be honest about how they're feeling too.
Exactly.
And then that does become an honest conversation. Yeah.
Yes.
All right. And then the third thing is just, I think we have to stop thinking that our romantic relationships are about being codependent. Yeah. You know, you are not one organism. You are two organisms living side by side. So embracing right. independence in your relationship is so critical. TJ and I really value that independence. And that's how we were able to be long distance across the country for 7 years. And I'm not saying that's for everyone, and I'm not saying that's the way to do it, but right. it really is such an important part of getting comfortable with the first two steps of this process that I talked about, and like spending time with yourself and knowing your needs, is that I'm okay if I'm on my own some of the time. I don't have right. to have you next to me constantly. Sometimes it's okay to be alone with myself and be alone with my thoughts and my needs and work them out, or to go do things on my own, or to go do things with friends without you.
Right.
Because that's a truth about me, is that I am an independent being. And so moving from this idea of codependence to interdependence, which means we are two individuals that have chosen to come together and depend on each other. And then it's like an accordion, go back out and have our individual independent lives and come back together and become interdependent on each other as a unit, rather than I see myself as Bennifer, which is one right. thing. And, you know, that unit moves through life and does everything together. It's going to suffocate the part of you that has its own individual right. needs. And you're going to put your needs aside because you're going to put the unit first.
I think there are a lot of people out there who see doing things separate as a weakness, as like people will view us as not a strong unit. And that I actually think it's the opposite. I think if you are unable to do anything separately, something's going on there. It's too much dependence.
There's deep, profound insecurity that's bonding you to each other. And being bonded yeah. by insecurity is like using, you know, what's that? Glue stick to try to stick ceramic together. Like, it's not a very strong foundation to be bonded right. over the insecurity of, am I whole without you? I constantly need you around me to validate me. Well, your growth path is to be expanded to your most, you know, highest, most empowered self. So if you're in a relationship where that other person is making you feel that, then that relationship is going to have to change or go away. It's just not the strongest bonding material, insecurity. And I, maybe I'm being harsh, but when I see couples that are like, you know, we have to do everything together, it honestly to me is a huge sign that that's not a relationship that might last.
Yeah. So I feel like this was actually a lot of information. And I think that romantic relationships are often at the, in the top three for a lot of people in terms of what's weighing on them emotionally. And it's usually because you're with that partner so often that I feel like we did give a lot of really helpful tips, but I feel like you need a place to start, that this is a lot of information for someone who's might already be feeling overwhelmed in their relationship as it is. So like, what's your like first baby step? Even though I think I know what you'll say.
Oh, what do you think I'm going to say?
I think you're going to say just listening, which is often what you say, is just tuning in with yourself and just getting a foundation of what your needs are. And it might not be overnight. You might not just sit down and be like, what do I need? Oh, I need 1, 2, 3, and 4. Like, I'm noticing in my own relationship that as I uncover other things that I'm discussing with him, I learn about another need that I had that I didn't even realize right. I had that was like under there. There's a lot of layers. So once you start it, I think your tip would be just start listening and paying attention, which would actually also be mine. You don't have to have your conversation with your partner tonight or tomorrow. Just start gaining. Like, I got to a place where I was like, oh, wow, I need all of these things I didn't even realize I needed. I'm going to start communicating that.
That's such a good start. What I will add is, if you listen to this episode and you want to start, sit down and ask yourself, what am I doing in this relationship out of fear?
Yeah.
Where is fear driving in the driver's seat of this relationship? And just get clear on that. Is it the way that I speak? Is it the role that I've chosen to take in this relationship? Is it how quiet I am about what I need? Whatever. Like, what is it that fear is causing me to do in this relationship? That is so enlightening. Because the pathway is to do the opposite. But you have to know first how fear is causing you to do the thing that goes against your highest truth.
Or encounter that. Think about when you're at your most fulfilled or your happiest. And what does that look? How are you expressing yourself in those moments that make you feel that empowered?
I love that. Is that Melissa's takeaway? Because we're at that part of the show.
And we are. Oh,
we didn't get to do the music.
Add the music right
here.
So drop the music.
Bean, what is Melissa's takeaway?
My takeaway from all of this is that your truth matters. You matter. And that I think if you asked anybody if they wanted to sleepwalk through life or be awakened in life, their answer would be awakened. And this applies to your foundation, which is often your romantic relationship in many cases. So take that, apply it there, make yourself of value, and hopefully you'll receive what you need, whether that be being met by your partner or understanding this partner can no longer meet my needs. But my needs are not going anywhere.
Beautiful. Pick your truth above all else. Thank you, Bean. Guys, thank you for listening. As always, if this show has been something that has helped you in any way or enlightened you, we would love if you would share it with your friends and family. And please, please, please leave us a review wherever you're listening. It helps us share this show with even more people. Until next week. Bye, guys. This has been another episode of Signal, the podcast that raises your frequency. This podcast is co-hosted and produced by myself, Maury Fontanez, and Melissa Bushka, and is edited by our sound editor, Josie Barak. Stay tuned next week for another episode.